Chapter 2. A scream woke Victoria Ballinger. It also saved her life. Tori was the only female aboard the Royal Geographic Society's research ship Avalon after her cabin mate was transported to a hospital in Japan for acute appendicitis a week ago. Having a cabin to herself also contributed to her salvation. The ship had been at sea for a month, part of a coordinated international effort to fully map the currents of the Sea of Japan, an area little understood because Japan and Korea fiercely protected their fishing rights and felt any cooperation could jeopardize them. Unlike her roommate, who'd brought suitcases loaded with clothes and personal items, Tori lived a Spartan existence aboard ship. Other than her bedding and a week's worth of jeans and rugby shirts, her cabin was empty. The scream came from the passageway outside her door, a male cry of agony that snapped her awake. Even as her vision cleared of sleep, she heard muted gunfire. Her senses sharpened, and she heard more automatic weapons fire, more shouts, and more screams. Everyone on the Avalon had been warned that a band of modern-day pirates were preying on ships in the Sea of Japan. They'd attacked 4 vessels in the past 2 months, scuttling the merchantmen and leaving any crewman alive to make their own escape on lifeboats. To date, only 15 out of 172 had survived the attacks. Just yesterday, they were told that a container ship simply vanished without a trace. Because of the pirate threat, an arms locker had been placed on the bridge, but the pair of shotguns and the single pistol were no match for the assault rifles cutting through the group of scientists and professional mariners. The fight-or-flight instinct kicked in, and Tori quickly got to her feet. She wasted 2 precious seconds making a choice she didn't have. There was no place for her to go. The pirates were somewhere in the corridor outside her cabin, shooting into the rooms from the sound of it. She'd be gunned down the moment she opened her door. She could not flee, and there was nothing in her room to use as a weapon. The light of a full moon shining through the porthole fell on the stripped bed opposite Tori's and gave her inspiration. She whipped the blankets and sheets from her bed and bundled them under the frame. Then she pulled her clothes from her locker, making sure to leave its door open, just like her absent roommates. She didn't think she had the time to empty the bathroom of toiletries. She crawled under the bed, pressing into the deepest corner, and packed her clothes around her body. She fought to hold her breathing steady as the first wave of panic nibbled at the edge of her mind. Tears leaked from the corners of her blue eyes. She stifled a sob just as her cabin door was thrown open. She saw a flashlight beam slice the room, tracking first across Judy's empty mattress before sweeping her own, pausing for a second on the pair of barren lockers. The pirate's feet became visible. He wore black combat boots, and she could make out that the cuffs of his black trousers had been stuffed into them. The pirate crossed to the tiny bathroom, sweeping it with his flashlight. She heard the shower curtain ripple as he checked behind it. He either didn't see Tori's soap, shampoo, and conditioner, or didn't think they were important. He slammed the cabin door on his way out, apparently satisfied it was vacant. Tori remained motionless as the sounds of the struggle faded down the hallway. There were only 30 people on the ship. Most of them were asleep in their cabins because at night the engine room ran on automatic, and only 2 stood watch on the bridge. Because her cabin was one of the last on the corridor, she was certain that the pirates were about finished with the crew. The crew. Her friends. If she wanted to get out of this alive, she couldn't let that thought seep any deeper into her brain. How long would they take to loot the vessel? There was little of value to pirates. All of their expensive equipment, their scientific gear, was too large to steal. The underwater probes were worthless to anyone outside the scientific community. There were a few televisions and some computers, but it hardly seemed worth the effort to take them. Still, Tori figured the pirates would need a half hour to scavenge the 130-foot Avalon before opening the seacocks and sending her to the bottom. She counted out the minutes by the luminous dots on the men's Rolex she wore, allowing herself to fall into the tiny galaxy of luminous points in order to keep from panicking. Only 15 minutes passed before she felt the ship's motion change. Although the night was calm, the Avalon rolled with the gentle swells, a normally comforting motion that lulled her to sleep each night. Tori began to sense the ship's sway had changed, slowed, as though she'd become heavier. The pirates had already opened the seacocks. They were already sinking the research vessel. She tried to see the logic in their action, but it didn't make sense. They couldn't have possibly ransacked the ship so quickly. They were scuttling the Avalon without even robbing her. She couldn't wait. Tori slithered out from under her bed and bolted for the porthole. On the horizon, she could see what at first appeared to be a low island, but she realized it was a huge ship of some kind. There was another smaller vessel near it. It looked as though the two were going to collide, but it had to be a trick of the moonlight. In the foreground, she made out the stern and wake of a large inflatable craft. The sound of its outboard engines faded as it raced from the stricken oceanography ship. She imagined the pirates aboard it and felt her anger flare. Tori whirled away from the porthole and bolted from her cabin. There were no bodies in the passageway, but the deck was littered with spent bullets, and the air had a raw chemical stench. She tried not to look at the blood spattered against the long wall. From her orientation when first coming aboard, Tori knew there were survival suits in the Zodiac life raft near the Avalon's bow, so she didn't care that she wore only a long t-shirt. Her bare feet slapped against the metal decking as she ran with one arm clamped over her chest to keep her unsupported breasts from bouncing. She climbed a set of stairs to the main deck. At the end of another corridor was the door leading to the outside. Between her and the exterior hatch was a body. Tori whimpered as she approached. The man lay face down, a shiny slick of blood dampening his dark shirt and drizzling onto the deck. She recognized his shape. It was the second engineer, a high-spirited Geordie whose flirtations she had begun to encourage. She couldn't bring herself to touch him. The volume of blood told her everything she needed to know. She kept herself pressed to the cold corridor wall as she stepped past the corpse. When she reached the end of the hallway, she looked out the hatch's small window, straining to see if anyone remained on the dim foredeck. She saw nothing and cautiously turned the handle. It wouldn't budge. She tightened her grip and tried again, pressing all her weight against the jammed mechanism, but it remained frozen. Tori kept calm. She told herself that there were 4 other ways out of the superstructure, and that she could always smash the glass in the bridge if the wing doors were also sealed. She first examined the other doors on the main deck before climbing another set of steps to the bridge. She knew she would get out of this, but as she approached the door leading to the command deck, a deep dread welled up. Although they'd killed the entire crew, the pirates had taken the time to seal the ship like a coffin. They wouldn't have left such an obvious means of escape. Her long fingers trembled when she touched the knob. It turned. Tori pushed against the solid steel door, but it wouldn't open. It didn't even creak. There were no large windows she could crawl through, no porthole big enough for her to wiggle out. She was trapped, and that realization destroyed any composure she'd been able to maintain. She threw her body at the door, slamming her shoulder into it again and again until her arm was bruised down to her elbow. She screamed until her throat was raw, then fell back against the door and allowed herself to slide to the deck. She sobbed into her hands, her dark hair falling around her face. The Avalon shifted suddenly, and the lights flickered. The water pouring into her lower compartments had found some place new to flood. The shudder sent a jolt through Tori. She wasn't dead yet, and if she could stop the ship from sinking, she'd have the time to figure a way out. She'd seen a cutting torch in one of the workshops. If she could find it, she would burn her way out. Now, energized as she was in those first desperate seconds when she heard the scream, she was certain now it had been Dr. Halverson, a genteel oceanographer nearing 70. Tori launched herself from the floor and ran back the way she'd come. She passed through the crew's accommodation block and reached a set of stairs that descended into the engineering spaces. She felt the first cold rush of air as she reached the bottom landing. The sound of flooding was like the roar of a waterfall. She stood in a small antechamber with a single watertight door leading into the engine room. She put her hand to the metal. It was still warm from the big diesels. But when she placed her hand low down next to the bottom jamb, the steel was icy to the touch. She'd never been to the engine room and didn't know its layout. Still, she had to try. "Here we go." Her voice quavered as she undogged the hatch. Water gushed across her bare feet, and in seconds she was standing knee-deep, with the level rising perceptibly. An open set of steps led down to the floor of the well-lit engine room. Beyond the tangle of pipes, ducts, and conduits, Tori could see that the giant motors, each the size of a minivan, were already half-submerged. Water sloshed against a generator housing. She stepped over the combing and started down. She gasped when the water reached her chest. It was probably 65 degrees, but she began to shiver. At the bottom step, she had to get on her toes to keep her head above the flood. Half walking, half swimming, she struck out across the cavernous space with a vague plan to find how the water was entering the ship. As the Avalon continued to sink on a more or less even keel, she still pitched with the waves. That slight motion made it impossible for Tori to feel currents in the water and pinpoint where they were strongest, where she guessed open pipes led to the sea. The water in the flooded engine rooms seethed like a boiling cauldron. In just a few minutes of frantic searching, her toes lost their tenuous grip with the deck plating. Tori swam fruitlessly for a minute more. There was nothing she could do. Even if she found the seacocks, she had no idea how they operated. The lights flickered again, and when they came back on, they were only half as bright. It was the signal for her to leave. She'd never find her way out of the labyrinth-like space in the dark. She cut smooth strokes through the water and swam directly into the antechamber. Getting to her feet, she found the water had risen to the level of her waist. It took all her strength to close the door. She prayed that once it was sealed, the ship might remain buoyant enough to remain afloat until another ship passed by. Cold and shivering, Tori climbed back to the second deck and padded to her cabin. She toweled off in the bathroom, bound her shoulder-length hair in a ponytail, and threw on her warmest clothes. The air was markedly chilly. She hadn't noticed, but somewhere in the engine room she'd cut the corner of her mouth. She wiped the watery trickle of blood from her lip. Under normal circumstances, the sharp planes and angles of her face were arresting, especially with her startlingly blue eyes. Looking at her reflection in the mirror above the sink, what Tori saw was the haunted look of someone on the way to the gallows. She turned away quickly and went to the porthole. She could no longer see the moon or even its milky glow, nor could she see the pirate's boat or the big ships she'd glimpsed on the horizon. The night had gone completely black, yet she would not turn away from her only window to the outside. Maybe if she got some grease or cooking fat, she could lube her body and squeeze through the porthole. She thought the windows in the mess hall upstairs were a little bigger. It was worth a shot. She was about to turn away when something dark flashed by outside. She peered closer, her eyes watering with the strain. She thought she saw it again, maybe 10 feet from the ship. A bird? It moved like one, but she wasn't sure. And then it loomed in front of her, taking up the entire porthole. Tori stumbled back with a scream. Outside her cabin, a large gray fish stared at her with its mouth agape, water pumping through its gills. The giant sea perch watched her with its yellow eyes for a moment longer, attracted to the light in the cabin, before finning away into the depths. What Tori Ballinger couldn't see from her cabin low in the hull was that the deck of the research ship Avalon was already awash. Waves lapped at the stern and bow cargo hatches. In a few minutes, the water would climb the bridge, swamping the ship so her stern-mounted crane would stick from the sea like a spindly arm clawing for rescue. A few minutes after that, the ocean would close around the top of her single funnel, and the Avalon would begin her plunge toward the seafloor nearly 2 miles down.